the John 4 one. I just wanted to comment on that, partly because as I came here, I loved that rendition. It seemed to pick up something of the way I imagine Jesus speaking to the woman. And I'm remembering Glenn Brooks, and he said, every time you have a situation where you could read the Bible in a particular, you know, interpretation, always go for the more compassionate one. And I thought that's been really helpful for me. Something also as a subnote, subtext to what just that John 4, I've recently discovered that in the New Testament there are three nouns of who God is, that he is love, that he is light, and that he is life. Every other adjective is an adjective of every other description of God is an adjective, that he is righteous, that he is holy. But the nouns are who he is. And I thought that was interesting as I read, you know, when I used to read John 4 and think, Jesus is being a little bit arrogant, sounding like an arrogant male Jew. You know, he says, you worship what you do not know, we worship what we do know. And you sort of go, well, hey, what are you doing? Why are you saying that? But this interpretation helps us understand that he's helping the woman come to a faith in who Christ is. And if Christ says that he loves you, if God says that he loves you, then who is anybody to say anything else otherwise? So for me, I just thought it was good. And I'm remembering one of my friends, Tony. He's now out of prison, but he was in prison. And when he heard this, I mean, he used to come to prison fellowship just for the, he tells us, for the Scotch finger biscuits, that's right. And he said he heard this and he said, it just hit me. The reason that I've been doing drugs is because I've been thirsty. And he went back to his cell afterwards and he said, and he named all the issues. He said, if you take a shot of heroin, you'll want another shot. But if you take Jesus, then you won't want another shot. He will satisfy your deepest need. And he went around and named everyone's issue. I thought that was pretty powerful. And yeah, that John 4 helps us understand the summation of what I've been going to be banging on about. Jesus goes out of his way for marginalised people. He removes barriers between us and between them and God and them and each other. And he sends those people out with the message of forgiveness. So, look, if you're interested in prison fellowship, come and see us later or take anything you want from that table and stuff. And thank you for those people who already give. I know that there are some among you who already give regularly. We really appreciate that. So three brief points. Setting captives free. Tim Finney, one of my friends, he translated Luke 4, and it goes like this, according to his, and I think I like it. It's really good. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, for he has anointed me to bring or share good news with the poorest of the poor, the destitute. He has sent me to heal those with pulverized hearts, to proclaim liberty to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to make the blind look up and see, to send those with pulverized hearts out with the message of forgiveness, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour, the year of Jubilee. This was an important verse, a couple of verses for him. This is his calling. And we are the mini Jesuses. We're mini Christs. We're Christians. And we are his hands and feet and called to do the same. In Tim Finney makes the point that this is in a chiastic structure, that it goes A, B, C, B, A, that the first and the last line relate to each other, the second and the fourth line relate to each other, and the middle line is the meat in the sandwich. He's come to set captives free and to make the blind look up and see. And for me, prison fellowship's an important thing close to the heart of God. And he asks us to put the last first. One of the things that God's got me doing, and I would never have picked 3 years ago, if you'd said that I would be doing this, I'd go, no. But here I am, and what we've done is we've got a church for ex-sex offenders. So those people are coming out of jail. It's an adult church. There's no children, so no one can be at risk. And we've set it up every second Friday for those specific people that, you know, yeah. So we had 19 the other day, and it's just a beautiful time that where there is a supportive, loving, gracious nature to the people that come. And, yeah, it's good. We call that church in a circle. Now, Jesus wants us to take those people who everybody else hates and, you know, love them and put most of our time, most of our energy, most of our money into those people. And I know that sounds ludicrous and stupid. Why would you do that? It's nuts. But I look at Mother Teresa's life, and what she did was crazy. Why would you spend, it doesn't make any sense according to the world to put most of your time into people that are going to die anyway. But here she is, and this is what she's known for, and her life and her testimony still live on. So Jesus wants us to do this, but he also wants this message to, he wants those people who are most broken to be sent out with the message of forgiveness. And I think that's just a Jesus-like sort of way. In the Bible, you sort of see that God lets the odds stack up against himself, and then you say, look, you know, Pharaoh's never going to relent. We're always going to be slaves. We're always going to be imprisoned here. And then God pulls something out of the bag and you go, oh, I did not see that coming. And that is true for my life. And a lot of these guys' lives. I remember speaking to one guy and he rang me up and he said, Steve, you know, Reset, which is a government-run, government-sponsored organisation that helps people come out of prison. Reset want me to tell my story to them. He said, who would have ever thought anyone wanted to hear my story? And he said it's because of one of the programs that you ran called the Sycamore Tree Project, a restorative justice project, that I'm come out and I'm whole and healed and I'm okay. And he said they're paying me money to tell them about Jesus. He said it's phenomenal. So that's one of the things. And I've got another friend who's come out of jail 9 years ago, but he is now at Harry Hunter's drug rehab center, and God said, I want you to set up a community garden. He said, I don't know anything about community gardening and I don't like community gardening, but I'll do it. And he has, and through community gardening and through having a coffee with people and praying with them, he leads them to the Lord. And you know, he set up a house for blokes coming out, and I've helped him. In the last 4 years, we've had 22 guys come through who are clean and dry because of that. So God is in the process of not just redeeming people's lives, but giving them a meaning and a purpose and sending them out again. But I want to also suggest to you, not only does God want us to help set captives free, but as Lyndon has alluded, or said actually, that we are also captives. We are captives to a world system of greed and exploitation of materialism and environmental destruction. And our sins and problems may be different to those that are in prison, but they're certainly not any worse. We live in bigger and bigger houses with fewer and fewer children. We're more depressed, more lonely, more anxious. We have the means to communicate and be connected, but we lack the ability. And you've probably heard this definition, but I like it, so I'm going to repeat it. That we're caught in a prison of working harder to buy things that we don't need, with money we don't have, to impress people we don't know. And, you know, a few years ago I was, Samuel is now 13, when he was about 5, I was going through a fairly hard time and felt fairly low. And he came up to me when I was watching him play Ultimate Frisbee, And he threw grass at my face and ran off in the other direction, laughing and bidding me to come and chase him. And in that moment, I thought, I love my son. I delight in my son, and I don't use that word very often. I delight in my son. And I felt like God said to me, just as you delight in your son, so I delight in you. And I went back and I read Ephesians 2, 8 to 10, for we are his, and in this translation it said masterpiece. And I said, God, are you calling me a masterpiece? Because I certainly don't feel like it. He said, I am. So in a sense, God set me free in some shape or form. It's a work in progress. But I also think that we are bound up in this system that just as Isaiah said, woe is me, I am a man of unclean lips and I live among a people of unclean lips, that we live in this culture that is also oppressive and imprisoning. And I worked for TIA for 18 years and I got to know Phil Lindsay, and you might know him, but he tells the story of when he was a young man and went to the... in the Manila, there was a evangelical conference, a world evangelical conference. I think it's Lausanne, anyway. He went there, and on a Sunday morning when he got a bus and went to the conference, but he got on the wrong bus. And he ended up in Manila's junk pile, a garbage heap. And there he found a church, and the church was there amongst the garbage, and they had one piece of paper from a Bible, because they didn't have any Bibles. And Phil's thinking, I've got 20 Bibles at home. I could have given them, you know, for God's sake. And it was that experience that threw him his whole life out. And he became strangely aware that none of those things, his university, success, marriage, family, all that trajectory didn't really make much sense. And so it was then that he joined TIA and went to Nepal and did his thing. And I thought, that's fascinating, to be able to look at all this world has to offer and say, you know, who cares? I don't want it. Only then, I believe, can we really be free to follow Jesus and do what he wants us to do. Not only do we need to set captives free, not only do we need to recognise that we're captives ourselves, but it's important to be set free to serve. You know, and Henry Nouwen wrote the book Wounded Healer, and in that book he says, this brokenness is not for feelings of inadequacy, but are the conditions in which we experience God's healing grace. We are made strong in our weakness, and our source of suffering can be a source of healing for others. He argues that without that, without shared experience of suffering, experience of shared suffering, that no transformation can actually take place. And whenever Prison Fellowship volunteers come to me and I say, thank you so very much for being a volunteer, no, the privilege and the pleasure is all mine. I actually get far more out of this than I actually give. And Robbie was with Dave. I took Dave into a house across the road from myself a few years ago, and Dave got drunk one night, and I said, Dave, what do you want to do with your life? He said, I really want to be a carer, but I've got a charge against my name and it's less than 10 years old. I said, okay, that's good. You want to be a carer. It's good that you've got a direction. What happened was that Robbie was also needing caring. He was a friend of mine and he was going to be put in a locked ward in Greylands, and they gave up hope for him because he'd kept burning all his carers. And one time he imprisoned them against their will in his own home, and they said, nah, we just, it's too big a risk. And so we were enabled to get Dave to be Robbie's carer, and it worked for 3.5 years. One night at Blokes Group on a Friday night in Lockridge, Robbie says to Dave, you've saved my life. If it wasn't for you, I'd be in locked ward in Greylands. Heck, I may even be dead. And Dave said, well, Robbie, you've saved my life. If it wasn't for you, I would be drinking myself stupid. I've found meaning and purpose through you, and I've found God through you. Robbie comes up to Dave and gives Dave a great big hug and a kiss on the forehead and says to us all, in actual fact, I don't know where I'd be without you, so thank you very much. And he gives us a hug and a kiss on the forehead. I do believe that there's something mystical. As we share our own brokenness, God works in us and heals us as well as healing other people. And I shouldn't be surprised, the Bible says, when you take leaven and stick it in dough, something hot and dynamic happens, and it changes both elements and creates bread. It creates the kingdom of God. So, in conclusion, I really like movies. And I saw Gran Torino and with Clint Eastwood. And in that movie, Clint Eastwood is an old, grumpy man who's a Korean War veteran, but he's dying with cancer. And the boy next door is Asian. I can't remember. Is it Vietnamese? I should know, but say it's Vietnamese. There's lots of gangs around. And they tried to initiate him into the gang by getting him to steal Clint Eastwood's Gran Torino. Well, he gets caught and he has to work his... by Clint, and he has to work it all off. And through that, he mentors him, and he's trying to figure out how to keep him away from the gangs, get the gangs away from this kid. In the end, and I'm a spoiler alert, I can't help but spoil it. He goes to where the gangs live, and Clint Eastwood acts fairly threatening towards them, and they all have their guns aimed at him, and he goes into his pocket and pulls out a lighter, and they all shoot him, and he dies like this. And in the so they get all the gangs get arrested because everyone saw them, what they did, the whole neighborhood saw. They get arrested, and Trung, the boy in question, gets set free. And in his will, in Clint's will, he gives the boy his Gran Torino car. The point of the story, and you probably picked it, is that Jesus died for us and set us free from the gangs and the violence and the enemies. He freed us, and he gives us a gift of life, of eternal life, of Zoe life, of a quality of life. And, you know, you probably are aware of C.T. Studd. He was a cricket and a cricket player and a missionary. And he said this famous quote. He said, "If Christ be God and died for me, then no sacrifice can be too great for me to make for him." So I guess the last question is, you know, in light of all of that, in light of what Jesus has done for us, how can we set captives free? How can we? What's the next step in our relationship with God to do that for others? And how? And if you haven't already figured it out, how has Jesus set you free? How can Jesus set you free? I guess that's the other question. Are there any questions that you have of me? Yes.
Is the support and the prison fellowship growing?
Great question.
Spend as much as you like on that.
Yeah, no, it's... Oh, gee. There are some elements that are growing, and there are some that are hampered. Probably no, Angel Tree has been kiboshed this year by the department. It feels as if we're getting... There is elements of the Department of Corrective Services that are... Well, middle management seem to be ruling, and we are in connection with the commissioner, and he has high regard for us. We're meeting with him in December, but he's being fed all sorts of weird and wonderful information from his middle management team, and so this is very frustrating because there are, yes, we have volunteers, and there are, as I get around churches, People are keen. People are interested. Obviously, there is some interesting responses that I get. Some of the responses that I get are like, I'm really glad somebody else is doing this. I'm really glad you are doing this and it's not me. And it's like, well, my point is, would you be willing to, you know? But there is a trickle of people who are willing. And in terms of growth, yes. Last year we got into Derby Prison, and we've never been into Derby before, and there are two volunteers who are as keen as mustard, and they've got the, as opposed to the metropolitan prisons, there's far less red tape. So they can go in and do whatever they want, and it's 98% Indigenous people. We're on the cusp of getting into Broome, and we've never been into Broome before. We still need to get into Kalgoorlie and Roebourne Prison, and it's political there. So there are some elements that are growing and there's some that are just being stymied. But through that, and I won't go on for much longer, because of COVID and because of these blockages with the Department of Corrections to get into prisons, we've tried to go around it. So we've started this T24, Transition 24 for post-release people. We support them and we're trying to help get the recidivism rate down from 43%. Every 2 years when you come out, 43% of those people will go back into prison. So we're actually trying to do something there. The Salvation Army were, in 2019, they stopped national funding to go to the Perth Magistrates Court. So they had a chaplain in there. So I said to the Chief Magistrate, would you allow us to go in? He said, yeah. So now we're on the cusp of being able to go in with our volunteers and be a chaplain there at the beginning of the process and to support, you know, families and stuff. We have a women's safe space that's grown out as a result of that for women of prisoners and carers of prisoners, sisters of prisoners. So, yeah, there's some elements that are going forward and there are some that are just on hold and being a little bit stymied. Oh, one last one. Sorry. You probably hit the question that I was hoping somebody was going to ask. When we ran this restorative justice program in Carnett Prison not too long ago, the prisoners said, hey, I'm free now, I understand this stuff, but when I go back into my community, they're not free and they're going to imprison me still. They're going to hold it against me. I've forgiven them I've repented, but I'm still, my community is still bound up. I thought, that's a good point. They said, why don't you run it in the community? So we've started last week a sycamore tree project for churches and church leaders to help them understand that it, as opposed to retributive justice or punitive as our system operates, that we're about... Jesus is on about restoring relationships and restoring broken people's lives. So it's very exciting. Yes.
Hi, Steve.
Hi.
I was at a seminar on Friday, which was actually about work health and safety and the new legislation, and a lot of the teachers there were talking about the mental stress of teaching these days. And one guy stood up and he said, I'm a teacher. He said, I work from 9 to 3. I go home. I leave the paperwork behind me. I don't do any work at home. I don't suffer any abuse, any physical violence. And he said, I work in prisons. And he works at Casuarina, but he said that actually the problem was there was no air conditioning. And he said the one time last summer he just stopped classes because it was 48 degrees in the classroom. And also it can get freezing cold in the winter. But I thought that was really interesting in the sense that obviously he's there, a high school teacher teaching presumably young guys that haven't done high school or high school has been interrupted by their criminal activity. And it was so positive that, you know, that. So, you might even know him. He's a tall guy. I don't know his name. But just that I wonder, I suppose, whether you've got any contact with people like that who are working in prisons doing teaching or other things?
We have some, not a lot. We come under the chaplains and work in conjunction with chaplains, so that's our main contact. But yeah, a lot of people that we go in feel incredibly safe inside the prison. Getting in's a bit scary for some people, but once you're there, it's just like having a Bible study with in your home, except everyone's dressed in green, or if you're a woman, in purple. But yeah, it's good. Thanks.
My question's a bit similar, actually. But yeah, I was just wondering about different organisations that visit prisons and whether there's any connection between you all.
In the religious space, there's Alpha. There's other groups that have, there's Buddhists that come in, but and we where we can we work together, but a lot of there seems to be a lot of I write emails and I don't get many back. I don't know whether that's normal or whether they just don't like me or I don't know. I find it hard to make phone calls. We want to. And if you guys have contacts and people are open to working with us for a good outcome, we're into it. It's just we've just been faced with a lot of barriers. When we go to Wanjining or Outcare or Reset, who are post-release, they say, we've got our contract, we don't need you. It's a replication of services, thank you very much. Or we're not allowed to talk to you. And I thought, well, who said? We want to work far more collaboratively, but we are facing some barriers there. Last one, and then hand back.
I love the first movie about the man's, you know, the thoughts he had in prison and so on. And I've often said to my wife, I suffer a little bit from claustrophobia, but if I was in prison, I think I'd be a goner. But I just wondered if you'd just like to comment just very briefly about the extraordinary number that they've been talking about recently of suicides in jail. I mean, as I say, I don't blame them, but and I'm a person who kind of loves Jesus and loves church and blah, 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 but I don't think, you know, the stories you told about a few ex-prisoners who found God and or even in that movie, but I don't think I could cope with. I mean, what's wrong? What is so wrong that they are committing suicide apart from the frustration?
Yeah, I went. I was involved in a little group called Mallee. Mallee is an AOD unit inside Casuarina Prison, and it has 70. And I used to go in there and into the cells, and I saw how close you are to the next person that you're sharing with. I'm thinking if you put two people with baggage and anger issues and you lock them down for 23 out of 24 hours a day inside that confined space, I'd go balmy. I'd want to either punch someone or top myself. And I do think those people, in my experience, and I have no proof of this, those people who are in protection, who have done terrible things to children and others, they often top themselves because they're horrified of what they've done, and because they've been abused as a kid too. So, look, it's horrific. But it also can actually help people. Some guy said to me, jail has been a good thing. It's been a stop sign for me, and I need to stop the life that I've lived and choose a different path. So it either tends to make people or break people. Hey, thanks for having us. I really appreciate your time.